Welcome to the Navy SEAL Mindset. I'm your host, William Branham, and this is episode 009. Today, we're going to talk about leadership. Don't turn away or turn this off. No one wants to talk about leadership. Leadership is boring or all that other good stuff. I have some really good stuff for you today because I was going to give you this whole 5 Navy SEAL secrets to leadership. I'm writing a book about, I've spoken about several times. But earlier today, and I encourage everyone to do something like this. Earlier today, I reached out to a bunch of people and sent some gratitude messages. And one of those people I sent a gratitude message was one of my former command master chiefs at SEAL Team 10. He later became the force master chief. I'm not going to say his name, but he goes by Mags. And so I'll refer to Mags during this episode over and over again. I reached out to Mags and I just said, it's been a long time. When I looked at my phone and I saw how long it's been since I've communicated with him, it was 2016 was the last time I communicated with him. But I'm heading to California next week. I'm going to be in California for 3 weeks. And I wanted to take an opportunity to reach out and maybe reconnect with Mags if he's around. I know his last job was at the Naval Special Warfare Training Center at BUDS, where we do SEAL training, basic underwater demolition SEAL training. And one of the other reasons I'm super excited to share with you some of the things that Mags has taught me is because I wouldn't be the man I am today. I wouldn't be the leader that I am today without his mentorship. So let me just kick this off because I got more to say about that. So the message was, Mags, I hope you're doing awesome. Awesome. I always write awesome in upper cases. Are you still at BUDS? I'm going to be in Southern California for the next 3 weeks. Would love to reconnect if you're available. And he replied back to me, I don't know, 20 minutes later. He's, Will, great to hear from you, brother. I left BUDS about a year ago and went to Yacht Restoration School in Newport, Rhode Island. I'm now pursuing my passion in the boating industry after 39 years of service to Naval Special Warfare, making up for lost time with the family. Would love to catch up if you have some time while you're here. I follow you on LinkedIn. Love the vibe you have created and are transmitting to the world. With great respect, Mags. So that, me just reading that gave me like goosebumps. Like one of my mentors is following me on LinkedIn and he likes what I'm putting out. I have no idea if I'm impacting people's lives in a positive way or not. That's all the affirmation I need to keep going. I had a hard time when I left the SEAL teams, when I retired, talking about being a Navy SEAL. I had so many people say, you need to do this. You need to share as much as you can. And that's why I started this podcast. That's why I get on stage to impact people, to influence people, to help make this world a better place. I have a tremendous amount of knowledge that I want to share with you, and I hope you enjoy and get something out of the information that I'm putting out. 39 years of service. 39 years of service to Naval Special Warfare. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think he probably served 30 years as a SEAL and then 9 years as a government service employee. I think his last job as a government service guy was as a motivator at BUDS, helping kids that are going through the program, give them a little extra motivation, give them a little extra leadership to really get the best qualified candidate out the other end of that pipe. I think that's what Mags was doing. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm stoked. I am stoked to go and reconnect with him in California over the next 3 weeks. I hate when people say, hey, man, can I buy you a cup of coffee or pick your brain? And I think I'm a little jaded because all of my mentors, all of my coaches on the civilian side who have a huge following, people ask them for their time all the time. Their time is worth a shit ton of money. Like an hour of their time is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars easily. One of my coaches, he charges for his coaching clients. I do not pay these prices, but he charges $100,000 a year. You get 30 minutes with him. So his time is worth $200,000 an hour. Think about that. And then people are always like, hey, can I pick your brain? Hey, can I buy you a cup? Can I buy you? No, I can buy my own damn coffee and my own lunch or dinner or whatever, coming from their perspective. And I'm no different. I'm happy to have lunch with you or dinner or have a cup of coffee. Do not try to pick my brain. We'll have a conversation and see where it goes from there. Or you can hire me and you can pick my brain then. But I'm going to go out and I'm going to pick Mags' brain. I'm doing the thing I'm telling you not to do with me, or anyone else that is of high influence that's out there. Don't pick their brain. Go follow them on social media, absorb as much as you can, and then if they're a coach, go hire them. Go pay them money. They've earned it, and life isn't free, so go pay for it. You're going to get a better quality product at the end of the day. So anyway, I'm gonna go out there. Maybe I'm going to buy his lunch or dinner or coffee. I don't know. Or maybe he'll buy mine. We will see. And I'm also going to try and convince him to write a book. Maybe write a book with me. I know that he believes that we are quiet professionals and we don't advertise the nature of our work. And he was one of the guys beating me down in the SEAL teams about not advertising who we are or what we do. So that it took a very, very, very long time for me to come out of my shell and get over this imposter syndrome that I had about who am I, what value do I bring, things like that, and share as much as I can about the Navy SEAL mindset, how Navy SEALs think. Yeah, I would love to write a book with Mags, or maybe a field manual. If he wrote a book, I would read every word of it over and over again, because 39 years of service to Naval Special Warfare, he's forgotten more about leadership than any of us will ever learn, probably in a lifetime. But I'm going to share three things with you really quickly that I remember from my time at SEAL Team 10 with Mags, and hopefully these resonate with you, and you can take one or two of these with you, put them in your pocket, and then go do some awesome things with it. And when I'm talking about leadership, I'm not just talking about running a business, running a team, or anything like that. When I talk about leadership, I'm talking about your family. I'm talking about your relationships with significant others. When I'm talking about leadership is just being in an environment and leading. It doesn't matter if you're in charge or not. Just take charge and lead when you need to lead. If you don't need to lead and there's someone else running the show, be a good follower, but always be ready to step up and take the lead. And I'll just give you an example about this. About a year and a half ago, I was in South Korea doing a job over there. And it was a whole group of people, very eclectic mix of people. And we couldn't decide on what we wanted to eat. And everybody was like, I don't know, maybe this, I don't, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? How about this? So I just stepped in and I said, let's go here and have dinner over here. We did not end up doing what I said, but what I did is I stepped up and I led, forcing them to make a decision. They didn't like what I had to say. They didn't want to eat what I said I wanted to eat. And that's okay. I didn't really care. But I wasn't going to sit around starving, waiting for us to come to some consensus. We're either going to go do what I'm going to go do, or I'm going to go do what I want to go do. And you guys can sit here and not make a decision yourself. I'm going to lead myself first. And if you want to follow me, awesome. If you want to make another plan, awesome. But at least we need to start moving forward. And so that's what I mean about leadership. Lead your significant other. Lead your kids. Lead. Be a leader in every aspect of your life. But first of all, lead yourself, which is really the first lesson that Mags taught us at SEAL Team 10. And so I'll just give you a little background about Mags. I think he started, his first command was SEAL Team 4, I think. And he went from SEAL Team 4 to Development Group. Development Group, if you don't know what that is a SEAL team on Damneck Base in Virginia. He spent, I don't know, 15, 18 years at Development Group. He came to SEAL Team 10. He was the Command Master Chief at SEAL Team 10. He left SEAL Team 10, became the Command Master Chief of BUDS, and then he later became the Command Master Chief of Naval Special Warfare Command, which he was the man, the senior enlisted guy in charge of all of Naval Special Warfare. I think maybe he went back to Development Group and was the Command Master Chief over there as well. And then when he retired, he became the kind of dive motivator mentor for students as a civilian at BUDS, and then recently retired, and now he's, so anyway, tremendous amount of leadership under his belt. And I'm just grateful that I had the opportunity to serve with him, work for him, and learn under his guidance. And so again, I'm gonna share a few of the things that he taught us in the chief's mess about leadership. So number one was your reputation is everything. That really goes back to lead yourself. If you're a shitbag as a leader, that is not going to stay under wraps for very long. Everyone is going to know up and down the chain of command across teams. People will not want to work with you. And once your reputation is soiled, it is very, very difficult, not impossible, very difficult to untarnish your reputation. His first thing is your reputation, everything. Show up early. Number two is show up early and lead by example. Number two is really leading by example. Lead from the front. Be the example. That's all part of your reputation. Be the example. Get out there and get dirty with your people. If you're in a leadership role, you should know something about everyone on your team. If you have a 5,000 man or person organization, it's very difficult to know who everyone is or what everyone is doing. But you should make an effort to go down, we call it the deck plate, to the deck plate level and talk to people. Interact with your people. Get out of your crystal palace that you're sitting in. One of the things that I did is when I was a troop chief at SEAL Team 10, is my job is not really running and gunning, but I did that as often as I possibly could as a senior leader. And I'll talk about this in the next episode or two or three when I talk about 5 Navy SEAL secrets of leadership, is I like teaching leadership through the lens of a gunfight. And we use a gunfight to illustrate what it is to lead. And I'll talk about most of the details of that in the next episode. But so one of the ways that we train for combat is we go out and we do urban warfare, we do land warfare, we do diving, we jump out of airplanes, we fast rope out of helicopters and drive vehicles. And then we integrate everything together. But when we're doing land warfare training, specifically land warfare training, there's a handful of calls that you have to make. And it really teaches leaders how to read the battlefield, read their people, and read the enemy situation to make the right call on the battlefield. We split the team up into the platoon or the task unit into smaller elements. And then maybe we start with the platoon, we split the platoon into two squads, and then each squad goes out and it learns, the leaders learn those sort of tactics, techniques, and procedures of the battlefield. And then they come back and they take a break, and then the next squad goes out. And then as we get more advanced, then the whole platoon goes out. And then as we get more advanced, the task unit goes out. You have 45 plus people on the battlefield at night, night vision goggles, lasers, guns, bullets, all like it's total freaking chaos. It's awesome. And to manage that kind of chaos takes true leadership. But one of the things that I did as a senior enlisted leader, like I don't need to get out there and get dirty with the boys, but I did and I loved it. And so when you finish a run, you're pretty wiped out. And so you could be like running and gunning for 30, 45 minutes, depending on how big the contact is, depending on how well the calls were made and things like that, how many down men you have, how bad the training cadre make the scenarios. But I would go out there and I would position myself next to that brand new leader to help him read the battlefield a little bit better, maybe sometimes add a little extra stress. Sometimes stress is good. Stress is a good thing. It makes you better. It makes you stronger. But I would do every single run without a break. And I would carry the down men. I would pick up the 60 if the 60 gunner was down, and I would start laying rounds down range. It's take their kit off and wear their kit on top of mine. So I'm like extra, extra, extra heavy. 2 guns, 3 guns, whatever it was. Carry the down men. I earned the respect of the guys that worked for me. I didn't get it solely based on my rank or my position or my time at the SEAL team. I earned their respect by going out there and getting dirty with them, going out there and doing really hard things, going out there and not using my position to get out of doing the hard work or the dirty work. I went out there and did it anyway. If you go out there and do that as a leader, you will get mad respect from your people. Then you can ask them to do even harder things because they know that you're not going to ask them to do something that you're not willing to do yourself. One was your reputation to everything. 2 is lead from the front. And 3 is it set the culture. So this is something that I talk about quite a lot. And this was something I learned from Mags. And he was very big on culture of the organization, culture of each. We had three task units at SEAL Team 10. I was task unit 3. And he asked us to drive the culture in our task unit. Each task unit had its own personality, its own culture, its own sort of tactics, techniques, and procedures that were specific to them. If they were going left, we were going right. We would still go in the same direction, but they might do things a little, task unit 1 or 2 might do things a little bit different than us. But for the most part, we did things very well across the board. But we had our own personality and our own culture. And so when I'm working with organizations and I see this and it drives me crazy, I tell leaders that do you have to drive the culture of your organization? You as a leader have to drive the culture of your organization. Because if you're not driving the culture in your organization, someone else is driving the culture and it's probably not the culture that you want. And so in the military, we would call that the E5, or at least in the Navy and the SEAL teams, we'd call that the E5 mafia. If you are not a good leader and you're not getting down to the deck plate level and leading those men, SEALs are some of the hardest people to lead because we all have attitudes. We all are alpha. We all think we know the best thing to do. And one of the hardest things as a leader is to, one of my officers, he went to the Naval Academy. He went to Harvard under a Navy program for grad school. And he said, when he came back to SEAL Team 10, and he said, my favorite class at Harvard was the negotiation class. And so he actually was able to hire his Harvard professor to come out and teach us 3 days of negotiation, which was a super fun class to have. And actually a bunch of team guys in a room trying to negotiate with one another. We tested the professor's mettle. He was like, I've never seen anyone operate the way that you guys operate. You guys don't operate normal. You're fucked up. So it was interesting having him, but it was super awesome to have that experience. And the definition that Mike would use for negotiation is to let them have it your way. And that's what leadership is. You have to convince your people oftentimes that it's their idea. And conversely, my job as a senior enlisted in the SEAL teams, my job is I don't make policy. But I do influence policy. Oftentimes when I'm leading as a subordinate, my job is to make sure that the officer who is making the policy has our best interest in mind. So my job is to let him have it our way. That's true leadership. You might think it's manipulation. It truly is. There is some manipulation that goes on there. But it's for the right reason. If they're going to make a decision that's going to impact the entire organization, you need to make sure that everyone's best interests is taken care of in that policy that they're going to make. As a leader of an organization, again, you don't have to be at the top. You can be somewhere in the middle, but you drive the culture of your part of that organization. You want the best sales team? Build it. Drive the culture. And just to talk about that really quickly, what I tell all of my coaching clients is you need to pick for culture. You need to pick 3 to 5 things, no more than that. Make them your core values. Make them your culture values, whatever you want to call them. So for me, naked, never quit, accept failure, kill mediocrity, expose your fears, and do the work. Anyone who knows me knows that those are my core values. But take 3 to 5 things. Don't have more than that for your organization because no one's going to remember him. I think Ray Dalio's, he has 130 and he knows all 130 and he forced all of his employees, no matter what they were doing at Bridgewater, to learn them. But it takes a long time to remember all of those 130 core values. So if you keep it simple, man, Ray is a stupidly smart guy. I've never met him, never worked with him, but I have heard him talk. He's a stupidly smart guy, and he created the largest hedge fund in the world. You can't be dumb if you're going to create something like that. But for your organization, for your family, for your team, we all have a team. who's on your team. For your team, create the culture and do it like this. 3 to 5 things that you're absolutely passionate about. They're non-negotiables in your life, in your organization, and then repeat them daily, every day. You should be shoving that culture down their throat nicely. Make it their idea. Make them want to learn it. Make it their idea that they want to learn it. That's a win. That's how you lead. The next thing I'm going to talk about are leaders are not born. Now, there are some very charismatic people out there in the world who are naturally gifted in leading, in letting people have it their way, manipulating people. I'm going to use that word again. And people just want to follow them. They're just charismatic. They're just really good at that. Those are anomalies. Those are unicorns. Those aren't real. They're real. They're real people. But if you're in a leadership role, don't expect to be that unless you were born with it and you still have to work for it every single day. Leaders are made. So if you're still listening to this, if you share this with someone who is in a leadership role, hopefully some of what I'm going to tell you will help. I work with a lot of companies and 100% of the failures of the company is leadership. Again, leadership is the problem and leadership is the solution. You have to lead and lead from the front and know what you're doing. You have to own it. You may be offered a leadership position, or you may see a gap in leadership. If you're ready to step up, or maybe you're a little apprehensive, but you know the right thing to do, step up and own it. Own that position. Own those decisions that are going to be made. What's the worst that can happen? Someone could come back and say, "That's stupid. That sucks. Don't do that." Okay, you do it better then. But as long as I'm here and I see that gap, I'm going to fill it. The end. And so you just have to own any kind of leadership position that you roll into. It's not anyone's fault other than yours. If you're the leader and the organization is failing, it is your fault. Ask for help. Be brave enough to ask for help. It's okay. One of the best things that, going back to Mags also pulled me aside and counseled me a little bit on this. I already knew it, but this was a conversation that we had. He was like, "Listen, let your guys plan the next mission. Give them that ownership. I let them plan every mission." But he just wanted to make sure that the point got across, because not all leaders are like that. Some leaders are very, micromanagers. If you're micromanaging everything in your organization is going to fail. You're the single point of failure. Your job is to train your people to lead themselves, to be independent thinkers. They're going to think of things that you don't think of, which was one of the awesome things about being in the SEAL teams. Again, going back to that professor from Harvard, that negotiation professor, where we blew his mind that we wouldn't negotiate the way that the normal person negotiates. SEALs think differently. And someone asked me not that long ago, what's different about SEALs? Why are they, or special forces? We all think differently. We're not conventional thinkers. And if you just hand a target package, "Hey, go plan this mission," you will be surprised at some of the crazy stuff that comes out from the most junior people of the organization. If you're running your organization, when I go into an organization, one of the first people I talk to is the secretary or the assistant. That individual knows more about the organization than the people who are actually leading it. And they probably know how to fix it. If you've done a really good job at hiring people, that's your most valuable asset. It's probably the secretary who doesn't get a lot of praise, or personal assistant or whatever. Like that person at the front desk, they know more about the organization than you actually think if they're the right person in that organization. But you still have to set your expectations of them. A mistake that I see in organizations so many times, and hopefully you will not make this mistake if you're leading an organization. I have seen more organizations fail or leaders fail. People in leadership positions fail because they're not the right person for the job. And so this is the scenario. You have the best salesperson on your staff. They go out there and they crush it. They're actually the person that's keeping the lights on of the organization. They're paying everyone's salary. You're paying them 1/10 of what they're actually producing. You're like, high performer. We want to put you in a managerial position. And they put them in this managerial position, but they don't train them on how to manage or how to lead. They put them in charge of sales. They don't know how to run sales. They know how to sell. Unless you train them on how to lead and what you expect from them, unless you give them a solid foundation of leadership training, they're going to fail. I've watched it over and over and over and over and over. The only people that don't fail in those positions are the people who want to lead. So if you're running an organization and you have a super high performer, you should ask them if they want that leadership position, not because they make more money monetarily. I'll share one other story. One of my clients was talking to me the other day, and he said he's one of the owners of the company. And he said, one of the guys came up to him and said, "Hey, I think I'm due to, I feel like I've been passed over for leadership positions. I think I deserve a shot at the title." And so he had a very frank conversation. I was super stoked for my client. He had a very frank conversation with this guy at the company and said, "Why do you want to be in the leadership position? We watch what you do. We see what you're doing. We see how you operate. You're a good worker, but do you really want to make the decision whether someone stays at this company or not? Do you want to work the extra hours that we have to work? Because we have to have meeting, we have to do our day job, and then we have to do all the other stuff to keep the business afloat, to make sure we're profitable, to make sure we can grow, to make sure we can continue to have people on staff and not have to cut people because we're losing money. Do you want to make those decisions? Do you want to make the decision to go up to someone and say, sorry, you can't work here anymore because your performance sucks? Do you want that? Or are you just looking for more money? Come to me with the right message. Like, if you want more money, let's have that conversation. If you want to do the leadership role, the things that leaders have to do that are ugly and dirty that you don't actually want to do because you don't have the personality for it, to tell someone they suck and they don't belong here anymore, do you want that? No, I don't want that. Okay, check. Well, let's talk about what you actually want. You want more money. You want to raise. You want to be, maybe we can make up a position that justifies a different pay compensation for you. So as a leader, I was so proud of him for having that conversation with the employee. Don't just promote people based on the amount of time they've been there or the amount of work. Promote people into leadership roles because they're the right person for the job. Or you're going to take the time out of your day, your schedule, and train them, deeply train them into the leader that you want them to be, the leader that you know they can be. This is something that the military does all the time. We actually promote people into leadership positions based on their previous performance. Not on what they are doing today. We think that they'll be a good leader or do a good job in this role because of what they did in a previous role as a junior personnel. And as they work their way up the ranks, they'll get handed more leadership positions that they're not really ready for. But if they're hungry and they want to do a good job and they want to be a good leader, they will rise to the occasion. So again, that's my 2 cents on leadership. Again, I'm super stoked to link up with Mags. Next episode, we'll start talking about 5 Navy SEAL secrets of leadership. Again, I'm going to use a gunfight as the example, the pressure cooker for leaders in the SEAL teams. And I think it'll be a fun episode. I've gotten a lot of good feedback when I've given a presentation about this from Sage, and someone reached out and said, "Hey, let's write a book together about it." So I have a book coming talking about leadership, these 5 Navy SEAL secrets of leadership, but I'm going to share with them with you first right here on the Navy SEAL Mindset. You guys stay awesome. Don't forget to get naked, and I will talk to you soon. Hey, this is William Branham, retired Navy SEAL, 26 years of service, and I have a free gift for you. Go to 5sealsecrets.com, the number 5, SEAL as in Navy SEAL, 5sealsecrets.com. Go download your free copy of these 5 SEAL secrets, and I'll give you a secret. The secret is naked. Naked is an acronym. Go over there and find out what it is. 5sealsecrets.com, totally free. All you got to do is give me your name and email so I can send that to you, and it's all yours. Then you can start learning how to think like a Navy SEAL. Talk to you guys soon.